Good morning, everyone. This is Gary Kay, and you're listening to a special edition of my Rants and Raves podcast. This is part of my AV People series, and I'm excited to be joined with Kimberly Lancaster, who's the founder of Castor Communications. Kimberly, how are you?
I'm good, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for joining me. For those that don't know Castor Communications, that's going to be, I think most people have heard of you, but for those that haven't heard of Kimberly Lancaster and Castor Communications, talk a little bit about what Castor does.
Sure. So Castor is a tech PR, social media, and digital marketing firm. Our clients range across a few different industries, including residential and commercial AV, as well as what we define as the automotive and industrial IoT space. We also specialize in alliances, which is pretty interesting and unique and touches us into a lot of different markets. And we help a lot from the startup all the way to taking companies public. So we have sort of an interesting mix of where we fall in the range of clients. We're based in Rhode Island, but have clients as far away as Israel and Poland and then to the West Coast. So we really look at ourselves as a global firm.
And how did you get in the industry originally? Where'd you come from?
So I went to school for communications. Actually, I started as a journalism major. And the school that I went to was a little heavily focused on broadcast, not really where I saw myself going. Actually saw myself as the next political reporter for the Washington Post. That was my vision. You know, you got to have a dream. And so, you know, when the school system didn't kind of go the way I wanted it to, I looked at sort of the alternatives of, you know, where I thought, you know, where my skills were and where I thought I would want to work in my career in the future. And I basically got introduced to public relations. And when I finished school, I went up to Emerson in Boston, did their global PR program, got my master's in that. And from there, I went to all tech PR firms. That's just what I did. And so I basically did the tech PR firm bounce. And it was in 94, I think, that I had my first AV client. And from there, you know, I actually had heavy AV and heavy automotive at the time. And it was always kind of a 50-50 mix. And it was probably about 10 years ago. It was actually when we added Runco in 2007 that it flipped us from being 50-50 to being like 60-40. And then the numbers kept kind of switching. And so now we have a strong blend of about 75-25 where most of our clients are in residential, commercial, AV tech space, or they cross into it via the alliance category. And so that's how it's grown. And it's a lot of having really good brands, really good opportunities, having a reputation that stood out for us, hiring talented people, and it's just grown over the years. I mean, we now have 15 staff, 22 clients. We're busy.
Yeah, and you've got some really neat clients. Some of the companies that some of the companies are really well known, like Control 4, who everyone certainly knows Control 4. But also, you've got some companies like Sbarro. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but I love their products and InFocus. We work with you with a lot of shows and Powerhouse Alliance, of course, on the home AV side and now I guess home and pro AV.
Home and commercial. Yeah, they're doing both. Yeah, and we have, you know, Z-Wave Alliance is one that we've had now for close to 5 years. And it was kind of an interesting one because it was before really the uptick in smart home. And you know, for me, interestingly, is that I joke about it because I've been doing the home of the future for 25 years. And, you know, we handled Microsoft eHome in the 2000s, from 2006 to 2010. It was just about 5 years until they actually shut down the eHome division. But we were the media center team. So, you know, our exposure to where Microsoft saw that vision going, companies we worked with, a lot of startups, a lot of brands that are still around but have gone a different path. But when the biggest transition from us was we took on Control 4 in March of 2008. So they've been a client for 10 and a half years. And I would say the Microsoft into Control 4 transition was when everybody started to know who we were. And we were able to be what I would describe as a little more discerning in our clients that we could work with. We largely do work on referral, meaning that somebody has to say, hey, you should call Castor, or they, or that's someone that we know. We don't have to do a lot of cold pitching. We're just not of that size, you know, not an Edelman or type of size firm. So I like working with people I know and clients that do good work and have good products and good stories to tell and good partnerships with us. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And your philosophy, you know, as an outsider, it seems to be your philosophy is very much focused on the relationships and helping building the companies within the relationships that you already have. I think that's been clear. And you and I have known each other for, I guess, probably about 15 years or maybe even 20 yeah. years at this point in time. But tell me about what of all those, you know, you said you've been doing the smart home for 25 years, all those different products that have come along, what's been your favorite? What's been that product that you look at and go, wow, that is just amazing. What blew you away is that one thing that you remember in your history of doing this?
So we picked up Kaleidoscape in 2003. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, think about that in terms of being 15 years before where we are now with streaming.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw that interface, I stood there. I was, we were at Acedia and I was like, I have to have this account. And oh my God, I lowballed them so bad. It was crazy. But, we picked it up. We picked up the account. We went running, like, we rolled with it. But you know, then we got hit with the MPAA lawsuit and the video group, whose name I'm not going to remember right now. And they both filed. I'll never forget this. I was coming back from New York. So again, not iPhone days, but I had the little Motorola. But I had two cell phones, and I had four people in my car, and we had just come off a press conference in New York. And we had 105 people at a press conference, if you could imagine that days.
Wow.
So that's also, you know, this is the days where digital content was just starting, really. Yep. You know, it was like companies like eTown. Do you remember eTown?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is for those people that don't know, this was way before the Apple TV and Netflix.
Way, way, 15 years ago. Right?
So, yeah.
But it was, you know, it's that interface that you see now where you're, you know, you're looking and you're like, oh, you like this. You might also like this. But it was this storage device that was $40,000. You loaded all your DVDs into it. And then they stored a hard copy and you, quote, put your disc away. And that was where the lawsuit stemmed from, was this idea that you were, quote, copying the DVD. And therefore, you know, it was unlicensed. It was copyright infringement and all of that.
Yeah.
Although that it a lot of it stems, you can look now in terms of what they did in the lawsuit, was, you know, set what digital copyrights started to be and become. So, you know, I give Mike Malcolm a lot of credit. It was a very interesting account to be with. The product was so cool. Everybody wanted it. I mean, anytime you have an account where the New York Times calls you and says, hey, we'd like to write about this, you know, you're doing something cool. So
yeah.
There's only a handful of those in my life. And, you know, usually you're begging for the press and whatnot. And, but it was also a great experience because I had never dealt with a lawsuit. So, you know, at the time I was very young. I was 15 years younger than I am right now. I didn't know nearly as much as I do. So, you know, we were dealing with investor issues, legal issues. So it was a great learning experience for me. And we did that for a couple of years until the legal issues got so big that, you know, they had to bring in the legal team and, you know, budgets were tight and whatnot. So, but it was so cool to be a part of. And I can't, you know, I mean, they're still around 15 years later. They still have a business model. So
yeah. And I do remember that interface. It was the first time I saw that kind of cover flow look as you move through that. And it was just, it was mind boggling because I'd never seen anything like that. It was sort of like, it reminded me of like a digital version of an album collection.
Yes, it's exactly.
Yeah.
People just oohed and awed over it. So it was super fun, you know, and I mean, there's obviously there's a lot of accounts that I've really loved. That was just it was so different because it was a real game changer at the time.
So you're one of, you know, there aren't very many women business owners in our industry. It's changing. It's moving. Obviously, I think our industry, you know, for a long time, as you know, was a good old boy network, and that's kind of how
sure.
the whole thing got started. But the industry has matured beyond that. We're seeing more women in the industry over the years. I've been in the industry, and I'm sure you've noticed the difference. You employ a lot of amazingly talented women in your organization. How do you
yes.
see the future of that? How do we make this, how do we get more women, and even for that matter, young people interested in this industry? Because it is so you know, technology has been historically male dominated, but also been, I guess, branded as sort of a geek fest, when really it's very intriguing.
It sure is. And I think, you know, you look at what they're doing today in terms of STEM programs for girls, trying to get them really interested, even at a younger age. But I have a 15-year-old and she is intimidated by technology, as were her brother, who's 12, has no problem taking apart all of our devices in the house and trying to figure out how to work. She kind of hangs back from it, despite the fact that I sit in this cornerstone position in technology and I touch so many different pieces and I try really hard to encourage her and do that. I still have the walls. So I really do still feel that there's this barrier on the school level, that it starts there, where there's intimidation to girls on math and sciences. And if we can't get past that barrier, then even up the chain, it becomes harder. But you know, when I started CAST, I was 27 and female, and it was terrifying. I mean, I would walk into rooms and it would be all men and I'd go pitch business. And I would, in my head, I'd be sitting there thinking that they're not taking me seriously, that they're just like, who is this? And, you know, who's in charge? And it was really tough. And there were times I didn't get business based on that alone. And it was frustrating. And you know, all it made me do was work harder and surround myself with good people. And yes, 90% of my staff is female, and they always have been. So I've always surrounded myself with very strong-minded, technically savvy women who are able to maneuver it. And, you know, they all have, interestingly, all of them have grown up on the tech, in the tech space. So they've all come from tech companies or tech agencies, the ones who have had the largest and greatest success. And that being natural and being comfortable with it is where it comes from. So I'd like to think that this new generation that's coming in, which is our, you know, first, what the Gen Z group now is, the first group of graduates that are coming that are truly mobile first kids, where they'll have had cell phones their entire, you know, middle school into their high school years. And I think that that should start presenting some additional opportunities of, the more familiar they are with it, then the more comfortable they will be and they'll stand up to their male counterparts. But it is, I mean, you know, how do you fundamentally change something that's ingrained in people? I don't know if there's a perfect answer yet. I just think that women themselves need to know that they can do anything that they believe they can do. And from that, the things that they love and enjoy will become the natural parts of it. I mean, you know, Pinterest was created by a woman. I think about that all the time, right?
And marketing at Facebook's run by a woman. Yeah, CEO is a woman. So yeah, you're exactly right. I think that, you know, selfishly, having two daughters, I'd love to see this change faster. But at the same time, recognize that this industry's been around a long time. It sounds like when you were 27, the key, the key takeaway for that was that you had that level of confidence that allowed you to succeed regardless of what was going on around you in the industry and what people perceived as what the perception of you was, whether it was the perception of you being young or the perception of you being a woman. That level of confidence really made you successful.
And I think perseverance, right? The proving I could. And, you know, there were the years where we would have to underbid and say, just give us a shot. And, you know, for me, the first account that made a difference for me at that age was Paradigm. So Paradigm's still around, Paradigm, Martin Logan, Anthem. Some of it really high end, very technical, big, in that sort of black box. Some of it was two channel, multi-channel came into the space at that time, but having the Paradigm brand, and that was all men. Oh my gosh. I mean, their head team, sales, VPs, marketing, all men. And it was really kind of taking that mindset of, let me show you what I can do. And by doing what I said I could do, they saw a difference in their business. And it was, I brought approaches to them that they had never even thought about. And I think that's also the advantage of the female brain. Sometimes we look at things very differently and see a different path to a solution. And I think it's interesting when I said about Pinterest, you know, there's all these moves right now around board of directors, California placing out the mandate of 40% of board members have to be female. starting next year, and that these companies have to make this change. And I think about how some of that has come, and I believe it was the CEO of Uber who said at a conference that you know, the biggest mistake he ever made was that he had this opportunity to invest in Pinterest and he didn't do it. And he's like, if I had had a female on the board, I would have looked at it a completely different way. And I think it's just exactly that. And that's where, you know, talent can expand and make companies better, whether you're an AV install company or, you know, design system design architect. It's sometimes thinking, what is this application and how does this work? And am I using all the resources and talent to give my customer the best possible job? And I think that by having different people, and that's different people of different ages, different backgrounds, people look at things different because of the human that they are. And I think that if people recognize that, they in themselves will make them stronger companies. I find the diversity mix, and, you know, I'm not the most diverse company. I have all, you know, literally all girls and Pete who work for me, all females. We have a range of ages for sure, from new grads to people in their 50s. But that said, you know, I've never been able to get over to having two guys at the same time employed. I can't really say why. It's just been the way it's worked out. But there are times when we do projects and I'll say, we need to bring Pete in on this because he looks at this differently. And, you know, just knowing that having a different person, it makes a difference. Or, you know, going to one of the younger people on the team and saying, how would you look at this? Like, from a, you've never heard of this, you don't know what this is. What would make you respond? So those are ways that we try to, you know, inflect diversity into the idea stream. And I think from the channel perspective, from the industry perspective, that's one of the things that's missing. You know, you go to Infocom and it's 85% men and 15% yep. women. A lot of the women are on the marketing side or on the yep. PR side or on the journalism side. And, you know, I think that sort of skews it. But that said, I definitely see where it's starting to switch, right? Whether it's at CES or Infocom or ISC West or ISE, you're seeing the numbers start to flick. I mean, I have run into other people in the restroom now. So that seems like a, like an aspect you're getting some of it. So,
I'll tell you, it's, I agree with you 100%. In fact, you know, like I said, selfishly, I have two daughters, but at the same time, my company is 80% women. And I don't think we'd be where we are today without them. I think they do bring a different perspective on products and technology and that whole idea of diversity. There are some women groups that have formed in the industry, both in the consumer, residential, and in the commercial side. Are you active in any of those groups, and how do you see those?
So I do. I am active. I'm a member of all of them, but I'm more active in women's CE than I am in some of them. And it's just more time than anything. Running a small business is time consuming. Raising kids is time consuming. And sometimes I already feel like I struggle to have enough time in my day. And as I, you know, I work on other initiatives as well. You know, the Consumer Technology Board and the CEDIA volunteer work. I do a lot of courses and teaching. And then I also do, I teach courses and do a lot of presentation work with URI within their PR program, because I was just, we interview a lot of kids from the University of Rhode Island and saw some gaps in their, where they were coming in from school, the teaching versus implementing aspect. And there were just pieces that were sort of not up to speed. So I, both selfishly and not thinking at the bigger picture of how much time it was going to take, got myself involved in working with the Harrington School there. And it is time consuming, I will admit. And so no, but that said, it is, you know, it's interesting because it is about 80% women that are coming out of that organization. And I was a little dismayed when I first started because they're all saying things like, oh, I want to do it for fashion, and I want to do all, you know, I want to do healthcare, or I want to do nonprofit. And I'm like, anybody want to do tech? And they look at me with a blank face. And I'm like, you guys got to look at tech, because everything you do is going to have a technology piece that touches it.
Yep.
And you want to have, you know, you want to have fast paced, you want to have cool and emerging and always changing and always challenging. Technology puts you there front and center. And, you know, how many pairs of jeans can you take photos of for Instagram, right? It's just, you know, challenge your brain. And so it's been interesting because a few of them have now said, I think what you do is really cool and I would like to see, learn more about this. And when the thing is, you know what they don't think? They don't associate technology of how it, like the baseline of how they're in a class that's filled with collaboration technology.
Yeah. So and they don't realize it's there.
Exactly. And you know, you teach, so you've been in the classroom, and I'm sure you're that it's Chapel Hill, right? Is that where you teach?
Exactly. Yep.
So the technology that was in the classrooms. I mean, I used to have to sign in for the computer lab.
That's right.
10 computers, and you would put your name on a list and you would wait an hour to go back to get to use a computer. So you know, and here
they
are.
To print something.
Yes, exactly. You know, and here they are in a room with four flat panels and a collaboration center in the center of the room with a projector and a big screen. And I'm like, you guys have no idea what you're even touching. And so it's sort of interesting from where they don't even understand technology impacts their lives. And so kind of this is part of that first quick earlier question that you had about, you know, how do you expose them to it? It's also getting them to realize that tech is part of everything that they do and they can't take it for granted. Because, you know, they should know how to fix their iPhone if it goes down, or, you know, they can't, their network is down in their house and they want to troubleshoot it because they can't watch what they want to watch. So when you get them thinking about it, they actually find that they respond really well and enjoy tech. But this goes back to that earlier part also of, you know, if they're not exposed to it at an early enough age, then they just don't get it. So
you're exactly right.
But yeah, so the women organizations, I think they all do a nice job of being out there. Actually, I think the regional actions that AVIXA is doing is pretty impressive. You know, bringing people in from around the local areas, business, new, you know, hiring, recruiting. I think that's pretty cool. So they had one up in Boston. My team went up. I had just had a hip replaced because, as I've mentioned, I'm old. And not true. It's a ski injury. It doesn't count. That's right. It was a young kid's injury. So, but they went up and they said it was great. And it was, you know, a couple of the younger people on my team went up. They met a bunch of new industry professionals and they came away with, these are really great opportunities to kind of expand and look at where your career could go. So.
Yeah, I agreed with you 100%. And in fact, our last podcast that I did was with Melissa Ross, who runs the regional women's counselor for AVIXA here in the North Carolina area. She works for Whitlock. So I've been talking with Kimberly Castor, the founder of Castor Communications. Kimberly Lancaster, sorry. Castor Communications at castorcom.com. That's CASTERCOMM.com. Kimberly, thank you very much. I really appreciate your insight and your honesty.
Thanks, Gary. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on and including me in the group.
Yeah, no, it's great. And for those of you who want to get involved, it's easy to find. Just go to AVIXA and go to CEDIA. Both of them have really well organized programs for women who want to get into technology, as Kimberly said. And of course, you can always contact the women at Castor Communications up in Rhode Island. But I see you all over the country. So even though we're based in Chapel Hill, you're in Rhode Island, we unfortunately have to travel all over the world. But at the same time, it's fun because you get to see all sorts of great things. So technology is more than just fixing iPhones, like you said. So
yes, exactly.
Yeah. So thank you again for joining me. I appreciate it. And you have a great day.
Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.